Welcome to episode 15 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. My name is Randy Wilkins, and as always, I'm joined by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirschner. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. Probably not as well as the Yankees are playing right now. You know, just came back from the West Coast a couple days ago. I wasn't in San Francisco, but, you know, just being on the Pacific timeline, Pacific time, definitely put some work in on your body just with like the jet lag and stuff. So still trying to recover a little bit.
Yeah. That flight back is no joke.
I
had to do that a bunch of times for like two straight years. And I don't know, after a while, I felt like somebody was like punching me for 6 hours when I got home. So yeah, that flight is not great, but I like going to the West Coast. I like visiting the West Coast, and then I like coming back home. Like, I don't think I would live there, but I like visiting the West Coast.
I think I could live there. I mean, it's beautiful out there. And the weather is just amazing.
Yeah.
Like in San Diego, it was like 75 every day. It just doesn't like get hot or cold really. So it's almost like 75 basically every single day for the entire year, which is nice.
Yeah. I love New York too much. I can't see me living somewhere else, but I do like going out there. I like LA a lot. You know, depending on who you're around, I think will determine your full experience in Los Angeles, at least. San Diego is a little different. San Francisco is definitely different. But if you're in LA, a lot of it definitely depends on what kind of like crowd you're rolling with that
yes,
heavily influences the experience in that specific city. So
yeah, I'm not really a fan of LA. I've never really gotten into it. I've been there several times now. Just not a city for me. Yeah. I definitely like San Diego. Just LA, like the traffic is terrible. There's no public transportation really to get around. I don't find it very walkable, even though it's a major city. It's not like New York. I've never really liked LA that much.
I like LA. One thing I do like is the Yankees being the best team in Major League Baseball on June 3rd. I also just want to put this out there right at the beginning. I also love all of the the Cope tweets and radio hits in San Francisco and San Diego, and Aaron Judge running away from the grind and running away from Barry Bonds' shadow, only to come to the very tepid market of New York City and not having to deal with shadows of legends and not having to take on the responsibility of following some guy named Derek Jeter and his captaincy. No. Aaron Judge ran away from the shadow of Barry Bonds and the grind of known pressure city San Francisco. So that, I'm happy that Aaron Judge decided to be a punk and be soft, as everybody likes to say now, and spend the rest of his career in New York, because New York clearly ain't shit. And Juan Soto, I also read today that Juan Soto clearly didn't put in any effort when he played in San Diego, despite playing 162 games and having a WAR at 6. Did not put any effort into his game, his career, until he became a Yankee. So those are things that I learned as the Yankees just destroyed the West Coast on their longest road trip of the season, going 7-2. So I enjoyed all that. I enjoyed that more, frankly, than the Yankees just like busting everybody's ass for a week and a half. So your thoughts on the Yankees and their West Coast trip?
Yeah, I mean, just incredible. I definitely saw a lot of those comments, especially from Giants fans. I didn't see the Padres one you're talking about. But Giants fans just losing their minds over Judge and Judge talking to the media about how he grew up and was watching the games. He name dropped their broadcasters. I mean, I don't know what Giants fans really wanted out of Judge. It's, you know, the Yankees matched the Giants offer, and once they did that, that was it. I mean, once he got the ninth year that he wanted, once he got the, like, that was, I mean, I remember I was there in, where were we? Yeah, San Diego for winter meetings that year. And the story goes, the Giants offered 9 years. The Yankees were at 8 years. He gets on the phone with Steinbrenner and says, you know, I really want the ninth year, and then, and it's done. So, I mean, he might have been a Giant if the, you know, the Yankees and Steinbrenner didn't want to budge off of 8 years, but I mean, it's not like he used them. I think he, I mean, I know he was certainly interested in joining the Giants. It wasn't like, I mean, like, use my hometown team to milk every dollar out of the Yankees. Like, he was certainly interested in going to the Giants. But, you know, obviously that didn't happen. And now he's, you know, in the middle of another MVP season with the Yankees. But as for the trip, going 7-2 on the West Coast, how many times have we watched this team over the past couple of years, like, crumble on the West Coast or leave the West Coast without a 500 record, even to go 7-2? And honestly, they probably should have gone 8-1. They lose that Angels game where Rizzo, I mean, they changed it to a hit, which is absolutely absurd. That should not have been a hit. But if he gets that ball in the eighth inning, they get out of that inning and, you know, you turn it over and you still have the lead. So it's incredible that we're talking about a team that probably should have gone 8-1 on the West Coast, but, you know, they have to settle for 7-2. And it's really just been the story of the season so far this year. Just the pitching doing their job. You know, we were discussing it in Anaheim when Carlos broke the streak of Yankee starting pitchers going at least 5 innings and giving up 2 or fewer runs. But he goes 6 innings, gives up 3 runs. And, like, I see some fans on Twitter, like, freaking out about, oh, you know, it's ridiculous that he gave up 3 runs. It's like, what are we talking about here? I mean, you go 6 innings and give up 3 runs, you're probably winning most of the time. In these scenarios, I think the streak ended at 16 games, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous to have, you know, so you're going through the rotation multiple times where your pitchers are going at least 5 innings and giving up 2 or fewer runs. And then you combine that with the hitting, the offense just being insane. Like, the Yankees have the best offense in the sport. So if you combine the best offense in the sport with the streak of 16 games where the starting rotation gives up 2 or fewer runs, you're going to win a lot of games. And that's what the Yankees are doing right now. But I think the moment that really stands out, obviously, is Sunday's game where Soto hits the go-ahead home run. And it's not like crazy to, you know, think that, oh, that happened. I think what was crazy about it is just the fact that you kind of expect it now with Soto and Judge and even Volpe. Like, you kind of expect them to do something. And that's really a feeling that watching this team over the past several years, I don't, like, that just doesn't happen. It hasn't happened a lot. Like, when Soto gets in the box, you're like, oh, damn, like, all right, like, he might do something, even though Doval is throwing 102-mile-an-hour cutters. It's like, I don't think Doval has the advantage there with Soto. I think Soto's one of those players where, you know, the hitter has the advantage over the pitcher, even though the pitcher's throwing the ball, the pitcher knows what he's throwing. Like, you know, the hitter obviously has to guess, but Soto's just one of those players where it doesn't matter who's on the mound or what that person throws. Like, you just feel like he has the advantage. And that's what we've seen for the past 2 months with this team and Soto in particular. It's like, whenever he's up in big spots, you just automatically assume that he's going to come through. He did it in Anaheim with the 3-run triple to extend that lead in that game. He's a remarkable player. And then just what Judge is doing is, I don't even know how to describe Judge at this point.
Yeah,
I really don't. I don't know what to say about him. Just what he did in May, and obviously the first couple of days in June. I don't know. I mean, he's on another planet.
I often think about it in filmmaking terms because that's the most relatable thing for me to do. And there are just stretches when you look at, let's say, directors where they have a moment in time in their filmography where you can tell that they're in a zone and so in tune with their creativity and their ability to execute their craft. Like, it's all in alignment. So you can look at a Scorsese, and there's a long period of time where every film, not only is it creative and engaging and entertaining, but the level of craftsmanship is elite. And it's, I don't know if you can ever master filmmaking, but you're coming as close to mastering your craft and seeing it unfold as much as you possibly can without fully stating this person has mastered what they do. And you can see it with Spike Lee. You can see it with Paul Thomas Anderson. I mean, it's like, I don't want to exclude women, but these are the first like people that come to my mind. And I think we're at that point with Aaron Judge now, that his natural ability, his natural talent, his physical presence is all combining with IQ and just craftsmanship in the box. He's close to mastering Major League Baseball. Now, will he ever get to that point where you can say that definitively? Maybe, but it's all coming together. And, you know, I know a lot of people talk about primes. I guess he's still in his prime. You know, I guess it's all relative to age and all those things. But regardless of the terminology, it's all come together for him. He's figured it out. Like, he's broken the code and can do it on a consistent basis and impacts the game on both sides of the field. Like, he's playing center field. You know what I mean? He's not playing right. He's not moving to first like some people oddly want him to do all of a sudden. He's playing center field, and he's like hitting offensive marks that are on a historical level. You know, like he's broke the code. And to do that consistently, like he's having a lot of people's best week over a month plus now. You know, people dream of having 1 week or a 5-game stretch where they're just unbelievably hot and in this zone, and then they kind of come back to earth a little bit or they cool down a little bit. He's maintained that level for over a month. And you're right. I don't know how to describe it. I don't know what the words are at this point. It's remarkable. And the best thing, bringing it back to Sunday, they don't totally rely on him. He's not the reason why they won that game in the ninth inning. He was a part of it. Obviously, he contributed, but it was a total team effort. And to me, the game on Sunday really starts with Michael Tonkin keeping the Yankees in the game for 2 innings and saving the bullpen a little bit and putting up zeros and getting some outs. And I know a lot of people don't like Tonkin. We've mentioned him before. Like, I think we mentioned him last week. But he starts it. You know, he comes in after Santana. The Giants don't score for 2 innings. And then you get to the ninth, and it starts with Gleyber. You know, the beleaguered Gleyber Torres has a good at-bat. Trevino, his hustle, obviously, that was brought up a lot yesterday, that had, like, a major impact on how that inning unfolded. Volpe, Soto, obviously, Judge, Stanton with a big hit as well, and off of a 98-mile-per-hour pitch. I want to add that since that's, like, the one knock on him. I mean, he crushed that pitch. But when we talk about Judge in the past, it's Judge or bust in many situations, and you have to go through so many at-bats and hope that you can have as many good at-bats as possible to get to Judge so that he can do his thing. But yesterday proved they don't have to do that anymore. I mean, they just have control. Oh, Tim is going crazy. Tim's mad at somebody. There we go, Tim. Tim's excited. So with Judge and the team now, it's not a situation where it's Judge and then everybody else. And for me, I mean, there's so many examples of where the Yankees are so much better and different than the last couple of years. But I think that that's one of the important things, that they have a circular lineup and a ton of contributors now. And they don't really need the brilliance of Judge game in and game out to win baseball games. They have the brilliance of Soto, Volpe's shown up. Verdugo has been huge for them. The list goes on and on. LeMahieu has come back, and I think while he hasn't like torn the cover off the ball, I think he's made contributions, certainly defensively. So it just feels like everybody's contributing in some form or fashion. And the thing that I was really impressed with yesterday in that ninth inning, it felt like they all had comfortable at-bats against a really tough pitcher. Like, I don't think any of them went into the box feeling overwhelmed or intimidated by Doval's stuff. Like, it wasn't just Soto hitting that home run. Glaber had a good at-bat. Stanton, I mentioned. Judge saw him well. It just felt like, for a pitcher of that caliber with that stuff, it felt like they had really good at-bats, and they're just, like, confident. They're just – you can just tell that they feel good about themselves right now, and it's showing up in every way possible.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable, honestly. That ninth inning was – it just felt different than in years past, because I'll echo what you said, because, you know, I go back to 2022 in the playoffs – and really the entire season, truthfully, that season just felt like, especially in the second half, if Judge went 0-for-4, the Yankees are losing the game. That's just how it was, basically. You know, Judge had 62 home runs, and he really carried that offense. It wasn't that great of an offense. Like, we're talking about Judge, Matt Carpenter going on a Jeremy Lin run. I still don't understand that one. Like, I'm going to look back on that in 10 years and be like, what the hell? Like, how did Matt Carpenter put up that season for the Yankees? Because if you look at his numbers from, like, 4 years ago and, like, every season following that, it's like, wait, what? This guy had, like, a 190 WRC plus. I think it might have been higher, honestly. Like, he was just insane.
He was hitting, like, Judge. He was hitting, like, lefty Judge for a while.
I don't get that one at all. Because he came back to earth very quickly after that.
Yep.
But this season, like you said, you know, even if Judge doesn't have a day where he does something crazy, which is rare at this point, you know, you still have Soto. Like, that's the biggest difference. Like, people want to say, oh, it's, you know, the pessimistic fans are like, well, you know, they started this well in 2022. Look what happened. They didn't have Juan Soto on that team in the offense. So that's a huge difference right there. The pitching staff, I think, is deeper this year than it was in 22. So, like, there are definitely differences when it comes to, you know, this start in 24 compared to 22.
They also didn't have Anthony Volpe. And
yeah, I mean, the way he's playing, he should be included in that.
Yeah, I mean, he's
top 10 in war.
And he's top 10 in war. He's not top 10 in WRC plus. I think he's top 10 in war. Right. He's top 10 in war. So it's Judge, Soto, 1-2, and then Volpe's eighth.
Yeah.
I think after yesterday, he's eighth. So, you know, that's a huge difference. Like,
100%.
They're 1-2-3, I would say right now, is the best in the game. And they're also doing it defensively. You know, we always put, like, defense to the side, but they can play defense. I mean, Verdugo's completely revamped left field. Volpe at short. LeMahieu at third. Judge is solid in center. Soto's been better than anyone could have imagined in right field. I mean, it's just the catchers are good. They can't throw anybody out, but that's okay. This is nothing like 2022. And I'll keep saying the 2022 team gets a lot of, like, flack, and I'm not really sure why, other than they lost to the Astros and there's, like, trauma there, I guess, to say. But this is nothing like 2022. Like, I wouldn't have expected a comeback like this in 2022, and I like the 22 team. Like, as soon as Glaber got the hit, I was like, oh, they're going to win this game. I don't know how they're going to do it, but they're going to win this game because they were only down two. And now you know that Volpe's going to come up. I mean, I'm sorry, Soto's going to come up most likely. So, they just do everything right and they compete and everything's clicking. And I think sometimes when you're watching a team, you're like, oh man, this is too good to be true. But it's really not. It's just guys are just like having really good years at the same time. And they're way deeper than they've been in years. You know what I mean? So like Glaber batted eighth last night. I mean, yesterday, you know, he's not having the best of years. There's probably a reason why he's specifically batting eighth, but he's still batting eighth and started the rally in the ninth. You know, there aren't a lot of eight hitters in the league that have the talent of Glaber Torres. So, you know, even I've seen people start to recognize what Cashman did with this roster. And I think we're at the point now where we can start to recognize and say, like, he's done a fantastic job. And it goes beyond Soto. Even getting Soto is because of things that they've done to have enough attractive pieces to get him. But I mean, there's throughout the roster now, there's a lot of moves that were made that Cashman did that are paying off huge dividends. I was a skeptic about Alex Verdugo, big time skeptic. I thought he was an average player in Boston. Then there was like all the stuff that was happening with him and Cora towards the end of the year. I know Michael Kay had mentioned that the Red Sox allegedly celebrated when they got rid of him. And he's been remarkable here. I mean, he's made a huge difference. He's been, I don't know if perfect is the right word, but he's been a stellar addition to this team. And I mean, it goes up and down the lineup. It's just, I mean, they've built a really good roster that's cashing in right now.
Yeah. I mean, I pulled up some stats when you were talking. I got to put my glasses on because these stats look crazy to me. I mean, let me put these on. For those listening, I'm actually putting on my glasses. The Yankees, number two and three hitters. So obviously that's Soto and Judge. They have a combined 195 WRC plus. So we're talking like Babe Ruth levels. We're talking Lou Gehrig level, Barry Bonds. Like that's the kind of production that they've got out of Soto and Judge. 195. The second closest is 163. Obviously the Dodgers with Ohtani and Freeman. Mookie leads off for them. Their slugging is 635 as a duo, which is unbelievable. OPS is over one. Their batting average for those fans 70 years old and older listening, they're 308. So, I mean, even that is impressive. I mean, just like that level of production from those two guys, that can carry a team. Because you're talking, you have basically Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig in your lineup with that level of production.
Right.
It's crazy. Which is crazy. It's crazy.
And as someone that remembers fondly is a terrible word for what I'm about to say, but remembers vividly the old Red Sox teams with Manny and Ortiz. This matches and quite frankly surpasses that in terms of production. Like Aaron Judge is better than both of those hitters. And I would say Soto is probably better than Manny and Ortiz as well. So you're talking about two guys that you have to navigate through 3, 4, 5 times a game. And they're playing better than vintage Manny and Ortiz, who absolutely destroyed the Yankees and haunted the Yankees for years. And now you have your own version of that. And they're doing it every game, pretty much. I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, this is like really fun. It's exciting. We don't know how this is going to end up. Hopefully they stay healthy, but to actually watch this day in and day out is this is the most fun I've had watching this team in a very long time. And I've enjoyed a lot of the teams during the Aaron Judge era, like 2017, 2019, most of 22. But this, like, I feel like 17 because of like how new and fresh it was and exciting and kind of out of the blue it was. 17 will always have like a special place in my heart, but like 24 is getting to that point for me as well, just because they're so good, you know, and they're playing to the level that you would expect them to play at. Like there's no fluke here. You can't find anything that feels like a fluky performance. You can't qualify it. You can't put an asterisk next to it. They're as good as they look, and they've been as good as they've looked since day one when the season started, and they've gotten even better. Like I remember we had Tim's going crazy today. We talked about how they looked the part in other episodes and how, you know, there really isn't anything that would suggest that there's something underlying that can undermine what they're doing, or that they're not, the record doesn't reflect the performance. And now they've kind of taken that next step forward as it's gotten hotter, as they've gotten more comfortable, and the offense has really found its stride. The one thing I was missing early on was slugging, and they've completely taken care of that. I mean, like we said, once they started slugging, the offense was really going to take off. And as soon as that happened, they're the best team in baseball. I mean, there's no doubt the record proves it, but also just the quality of plays. There's nobody playing better than them. And I know Philly's really good. There's no disrespect to Philly and some of the other teams, the Orioles, I'm not trying to like dismiss what they're doing, but nobody's playing the brand of baseball the Yankees are playing right now. That can change, but at the moment, they're clearly the best team in Major League Baseball.
I agree with you 100%. You know, the Yankees have the best offense. The Phillies have the best pitching. They have a two war lead over the second best team pitching. The Yankees pitching, they have the lowest ERA. But like, if you look at the underlying metrics, like the underlying metrics would suggest that at some point, they're not going to be pitching at this level anymore. I think they're like 15th in expected FIP, which puts them obviously middle of the road. But the five guys in the rotation have obviously been remarkable. You know, Clark Schmidt, who we'll talk about in a little while, even him, you know, before he goes down, he's one of the best pitchers the Yankees had this year. But, you know, if we're just looking at the underlying metrics, I would suspect at some point the pitching isn't going to be doing what they have been doing. But it's fine, though, because if like the offense continues to hit the way they have, even if your starter goes five innings, gives up four runs, like that's still fine with this offense. Like that's still good enough to win a game. Whereas in years past, that wasn't the case. I actually made a joke with my friend, Fred Katz, who covers the Knicks for The Athletic. He's a huge Yankees fan. I was telling him after yesterday's game, I was like, you know, I probably should start, you know, gathering material for the World Series book that I'm going to write. I mean, that's just like it's a joke, obviously, because we're still in early June, but I mean, they got that feel right now. They certainly have that look. They have that, like those moments. Like yesterday was a moment.
Yep.
When you watch the DVD of the Yankees' 28th championship, and like that moment is on there for sure.
Absolutely. I think yesterday was the first time when I said to myself, this is like 2009. And I got that feeling in 2009 in the second half, after the trade deadline, and then the Yankees like really took off. And I believe that was when they had that 15 inning win against Boston, when I think it was A-Rod that hit the home run.
Yep.
And
it was like that 5-hour Sunday night game.
Yeah, that went on forever. And I believe that was in August. And it was around that time when I was like, oh, they're winning the World Series. Like, nobody's beating this team. Like, I'm convinced. I'm all in. And it was when we did the captain, CC Sabathia also said, like, in the second half, he was like, oh, we're winning the World Series. Like, this is it. Tim also agrees. Tim is definitely going to be a part of this episode. Tim strongly agrees. So I'm starting to get that feeling with this team even earlier than the 2009 team. Again, we don't know what's going to happen. There's a lot of season left, but they're starting to like create those moments where you start to say, okay, this team has it. Whatever it is, and I know that's like an overused thing, but I don't care. I'm going to use it. It's the most convenient phrase to use at the moment. There's something happening with this team, and even they are starting to acknowledge it, and they're starting to use the word special when they talk about the clubhouse. Boone is bringing back the Savages. There was a Savages callback yesterday after that game. He was fired up. So something's going on with this team in a very positive way that if they can maintain it, I have really difficult times figuring out who could beat this team in the playoffs. And yeah. you mentioned the pitching and where they are at in their underlying metrics, but there is someone close to returning that could probably help those stats a little bit. And we will talk about him right after this break. And we're back. I had to have a talk with Tim and let him know that's okay. The Yankees are doing well. He doesn't need to be pissed off and ornery. We'll probably hear from him again. So I'm just giving everybody a warning. He's having a day today. I don't know what's going on with him, but I put him in his crate so he can like hang out and like relax a little bit, but he's giving me the death stare. So just giving everybody a heads up now that Tim might be vocal one more time. But as we alluded to going into the break, there is someone that is a very important piece of this puzzle for the Yankees. And as we talk about the World Series and the potential for this team to make it and maybe win it this year, there's somebody that needs to be a part of that, and that's Gerrit Cole. And obviously, there's some very encouraging news on that front. So, Chris, do you want to let everybody know what the status is for Gerrit as we speak today on Monday, June 3rd?
Yeah, I'm sure most people know by now, but Cole will start a rehab assignment with AA Somerset Tuesday, so the day this episode comes out. Do not know how many rehab starts he will need. Boone said the other day that it's probably going to be a couple, you know, a couple's two. I would be surprised if it's just two starts, considering, you know, one, he didn't have a full spring training. He's still being built up. So I would say I would be surprised if it's two. Three probably seems likelier. Three or four, honestly, depending on just how he feels and how he's bouncing back in between his outings. So if we're talking three, let's say three rehab starts that Cole will make, that could put him on track to possibly be available June 19th. That was one of the dates that I mentioned in a story I wrote the other day. June 19th is at home against Baltimore, which would obviously be a very important series for the Yankees, considering the Orioles are not going away anytime soon. They're going to be a thorn in the Yankee side basically all season if they continue playing the way they have. You know, even with the Yankees having the best record in baseball, they only have a three-game lead over Baltimore because Baltimore has been, you know, awesome this year. So that could be a series that, you know, could make sense to bring Cole back, even if he's not built completely up. You know, built up means, you know, he's going to be able to throw 100-plus pitches. Let's say, you know, at the time they bring him back, for if this is the case, 85 pitches, 80 pitches, like I would still probably take Cole over, you know, Cody Poteet. And Cody Poteet, like, shout out to him. Like, he pitched well this weekend. So that's no shade to him, but you obviously would rather have Gerrit Cole pitching against the Orioles. If it's not that game, June 25th, my birthday, actually, they are in Citi Field that night against the Mets. Honestly, with the way the Mets are playing, that could be an easy game for Cole to make his season debut. That offense is awful. But yeah, so like there are a couple of dates that obviously make sense for the Yankees to bring him back. Ultimately, they'll have to make a final decision if they go the distance with him on July 4th. Pitchers have 30 days on the injured list once they start their rehab assignment to, you know, come back to the major league roster. So July 4th at the latest would be the day that the Yankees have to decide. But you know, if everything goes well, you expect him back before then. And those dates that I mentioned, June 19th at home and June 25th against the Mets at Citi Field.
So I think part of the calculus here is also how effective Cole will be in these rehab starts. One, because he's obviously very much a perfectionist. And I think that part of his comfort in coming back is probably where he feels personally about how effective he's been in those rehab starts and how that can translate to a major league start. I don't think Cole will put himself in a position where if he feels like he still needs to work on some things, that he's just going to jump the gun and want to be placed on the major league roster if his stuff and execution isn't where he wants it to be. And I would assume that the Yankees are in lockstep with that. You know, it would be great to have him back for obvious reasons, but you want him to be Gerrit Cole out of the gate or as close to it as possible, and not compromise quality just for the sake of bringing him back sooner. And part of the reason I mentioned that is, and I want to give credit to John Brophy, who's down in Florida, who actually watched Gerrit Cole pitch to some of the young guys in the system before they started his rehab assignment. And John said earlier today that on Twitter, given he, meaning Cole, had 3 ups last time out and threw 43 pitches, I think he would go 4 innings, 60 pitches on Tuesday. The kids were making decent contact, though, and Cole gave up something like 7 hits, including a couple of barrels. So this is against, like, obviously lower minor league affiliate kids, and he wasn't exactly where he would like to be. So I think we have to take that into account as well, that it's not just the endurance with Cole, but it's also how effective his pitches are, especially if there's a chance that he can come in against the Orioles. I mean, you have to, if you're going to make that decision, then he has to be ready to go right away. You don't want to lose a game just to accommodate Gerrit Cole being on a major league roster. This is going a little bit quicker than I think both of us anticipated, because I think the both of us talked about the All-Star break and that time being the more likely scenario. Obviously, that's not going to happen. He's going to be back before then. So this is happening quicker than at least I anticipated, but I wouldn't rush it. I mean, if it lines up where he can face the Mets versus the Orioles, I think I might take that. If something like that matters to the Yankees, maybe it doesn't. Maybe they're just like, we don't care as Gerrit Cole, you know, he could face an all-star team. We could care less. If he's ready, he's going to be better than them. So that might be part of the thinking as well. But as an outsider that doesn't have access to all the stuff that they're discussing and the metrics and the data and his contributions to all of this, the Mets start makes way more sense to me. I mean, that's just a way to get your feet wet, go up against a bad team, bad offense, and then kind of get your season rolling. But, you know, Cole might say, I'm ready to go. This is like opening day for me. It doesn't matter, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a mentality that goes along with it too. When you're the best pitcher in baseball, you probably don't care. Like,
Yes. And knowing Garrett and talking with Garrett, yes, he certainly doesn't care.
Yeah. I mean,
if he makes his debut against Baltimore, he'll feel like he's ready to go. And that doesn't mean he's going to have success, obviously. And we still don't know how Garrett's going to look coming off of this injury. So that's also something to note for fans, you know, clamoring that, you know, oh, we're getting the Cy Young back. We don't know how he's going to perform yet. So I would just like temper expectations a little bit. I mean, he might, you know, come out and look like the Cole from last season. And obviously that would be a huge boost for the Yankees' chances of winning a title. Like if he's going to continue pitching the way he did last year, and then you add him to what they already have in the rotation, that's a huge boost, but we still don't know how he's going to perform yet. But with Garrett, you know, if he feels he's ready June 19th and it's the Orioles, it's the middle of the week, he'll pitch. If he feels like he's not ready and needs one more, you know, the Mets outing certainly makes sense, but the Yankees are certainly going to do what's best for Garrett. You know, just because it is a series against Baltimore, if he's not fully ready, they won't pitch him. That's just how they operate. So that's also something to note. Whenever Garrett does come back, the Yankees will feel like they can trust that he is ready to go. And that doesn't mean it's 100 pitches. Even if, you know, it's 80 pitches and he's coming back early, the Yankees will feel like, you know, Garrett's in a good spot and he can help us win a game that day.
There's something I just want to mention because we talked about the Mets real quick, which is, this is pretty crazy. The Yankees have as many road wins as the Mets have total wins. So I think I checked that after the Yankees won yesterday. The Yankees have 24 road wins. The Mets have 24 total wins. And I just wanted to throw that out there for people that are into those types of things, especially those that it would go after me, even though I didn't say anything bad about the Mets. I just wanted to point that out.
Yep. I just fact checked you. The Mets are 24-35. The Yankees are 24-11 on the road.
Yeah. They also have the most road wins in Major League Baseball. That would be the Yankees. So just wanted to throw that out there. You know, just wanted to throw some stats for those out you, for those people out there that like that kind of thing. So that's Cole, and that's obviously a positive, but as oftentimes these things go, there's also a negative on the pitching side, and that is the injury to Clark Schmidt, who has a lat strain. And I don't know if they put a grade on it, but it's not good. And I am concerned about this injury. I think whenever a pitcher gets a lat strain, there is cause for concern. And the timeline that the Yankees provided just for him to get back to picking up a baseball was not encouraging. And obviously, the Yankees have gone through this with Luis Severino in recent years. I believe there was somebody else that they had that I can't remember off the top of my head who also had a lat strain that knocked him out for a while. But obviously Severino is the most recognizable case with this injury over the last couple seasons. And I am like really concerned about Clark Schmidt and if he's going to pitch again this season. And if he does, how effective he will be. Those injuries are like really tricky for pitchers, and they have to be real careful, and you don't really know how they're going to respond once they get back into a game. And it also feels like, not just with Severino, but with other pitchers around the game that get that injury, there's always a setback. Like they get to a certain point and then they hit a wall and then they kind of fall back. So I know people think that he might be back like in July. We're not seeing him till August, in my opinion, in best case scenario. Mm-hmm. And when he comes back, if he comes back, I have no idea what he's going to look like. I mean, it's a terrible injury for a guy who we've talked up a lot on this podcast. And we both felt he was putting together an all-star campaign for himself. and now he's going to be on the shelf for a while. And I would say it's a big blow for the rotation because I think it is. But obviously they have enough depth and quality to cover for it. And Cole is back soon. But I feel bad for Clark and for the team because he was pitching really well.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, Clark had his coming out party basically this season with how he was pitching. You know, he was one of the most effective starters across baseball. So it's certainly he used the word when we talked with him in Anaheim, he used the word devastating. You know, you feel bad for a guy who's like he worked this far to get his spot in the rotation last year. You know, he was fine last year, but like really this year, he took that next step and emerged as one of the better starters across baseball. So it's unfortunate for him. And with what they said, you know, they used 4 to 6 weeks of no throw. So this injury is going to take a really, really long time. You know, on the lower end, that's obviously a month. And we're talking July at some point, maybe he can start resuming throwing. But then at that point, he's going to have to be built back up again. So he would have to be starting from the ground floor, essentially. So that means August, mid-August probably, is the best case scenario. And as you said, these injuries are tricky just with where the lat is located. There's a lot of strain that you put on your lats when you're a pitcher, especially. So it wouldn't be a surprise at all if, you know, his rehab has a couple of start and stops with just the complexity of where this injury is located on your body. So it's certainly I wouldn't say I would be shocked if we don't see Schmidt again this season. But, you know, if you're looking at a best case scenario, we're talking mid-August, late August, possibly. And at that point, the Yankees are going to, you know, have a good idea of what they would want their playoff rotation to look like. I don't know if they would even put Clark back in the rotation at this point, especially if we're talking late August, early September, mid-September, who knows? Because then, you know, you only have a few weeks until the playoffs begin at that point. Maybe they would decide that, you know, it would be better to use Clark in a shorter role where he's a multi-inning guy, which is what he did in 22 in the playoffs. But again, that's so far down the road. We're just speculating. But it wouldn't be a surprise if he rejoined the Yankees, let's say it's September, that they just decide, all right, we're not going to have him be in a starter role. Instead, we'll see how he looks in this multi-inning role for the time being, because at that point, the Yankees would have an idea, or they could, you know, possibly with the way they're playing, have a spot already locked in to the playoffs. And at that point, I think we discussed it a few weeks ago, where if they have that big of a lead, let's say in the division, or they're locked into like the first wild card, to experiment some to see, okay, like we know we're in the playoffs. Like, let's see what Clark looks like in a 2-inning or 3-inning reliever role, or let's see what, you know, Luis Gil could look like in a 2 or 3-inning reliever role. Because at that point, like the regular season won't matter. Again, that's if the Yankees have a playoff spot locked in, or if the division's already won and there's no way the Orioles are coming back. So they'll have time to figure all this stuff out. But in the short term, it's certainly sad that, you know, Schmidt, with the way he's pitching this year, goes down. And it's also a blow for the Yankees because he's someone who every fifth day was giving the Yankees an opportunity to win a game. Every single start that Clark had this year, the Yankees were in the game. And that's a credit to Schmidt and the job he did this season.
So let me ask you this. We know Cole's coming back. Schmidt is out. There is still the heel thing, because it's a long season and we don't know how he's going to hold up. Do you think at some point the Yankees consider trading for a starter? I'm not saying like a top of the rotation arm. I'm just saying like a serviceable starter. I don't necessarily mean an innings eater either, because that kind of defeats the purpose. You don't want to just throw somebody out there just to throw innings. Like a quality back end guy.
Like a Domingo Germán quality type of starter, essentially.
I
mean,
I wouldn't.
I'm not saying Domingo, but like that kind of starter.
Yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be a surprise, because one, you can never have enough pitching, and you know, coming into the season, I think most people would have said they don't have enough depth in the starting rotation. So it wouldn't be a surprise if they added someone of like Domingo's caliber, where, you know, he's like a 5 or even a 6 in the rotation. I do think that like they've shown that they do have some depth with Cody Poteet. You know, if he continues pitching, you know, he's made 2 starts for the Yankees, and he was doing fine in the minor leagues. But if he shows that, like, you know, you can get 5 innings out of him, maybe not. But again, I think you can never have enough pitching. It wouldn't be a surprise if they got someone who's cheap, or, you know, can throw 5-6 innings in a game if they needed a spot start somewhere. It's obviously not their biggest need, which we'll talk about in a little while when we get to our mailbag. But yeah, I mean, I'm speculating here, but it wouldn't be a surprise if they added a starter. Not, I wouldn't say it's top of the line starter, but someone, you know, who can make a spot start on occasion.
Yeah. I have a feeling they're going to look into it, just because the history of Brian Cashman has kind of shown that even if they don't feel like they need a top of the rotation guy, which they don't, I mean, that's, I think they're covered on that end of things, but they do believe in organizational depth that can kind of, I guess, swing around a little bit. That might not have been the best phrase, but you guys know what I mean. So I think they will look to try to bring somebody in before the trade deadline. Also, I still feel like they're going to be monitoring Heal in some way, whether obviously they're not going to do anything with him now in terms of where his position is in the rotation, but they do have to pay attention to his workload and where his body is at as the season progresses. So they might want to insulate themselves a little bit to help with Heal's workload as the season goes on, because he's obviously entrenched as a starter. He's their best starter right now. And I think it would be beneficial to him and the organization to make sure that they have just enough depth to just create flexibility in managing Heal throughout the season, because we're in early June. We don't know where he's going to be in early August, you know, as the season starts to really turn into a grind for all players. So I think it would be smart, now that Schmidt's not going to be around for a while, to look into that at some point. And again, as we both said, definitely does not need to be some big time pitcher where you're giving up the farm. They don't need that piece, but I think somebody, like you said, a Germán type would be helpful if that person's available and isn't too expensive. It's just something to think about as we move forward. It's not necessary now. I'm not calling for it now or ringing alarm bells. It's just something that popped in my head as we were speaking, as the rotation will start to change as the season goes on. So Chris mentioned the mailbag. We're going to take this break. We have a bunch of questions. We're going to try to get to all of them. So we will get into the mailbag segment right after this break. And we're back. It's mailbag time. It's one of the fun portions of the podcast, especially because there is a theme that has popped up over these questions over the last couple episodes, and we will hit on that theme in a second. I bet you all can guess what that theme is, but We'll give you a minute or two to think about it while we answer this first question. From Justin Sanchez. Hey, guys. This is Justin from Dykeman. As Tim says hello to Justin from Dykeman. He's a big fan of the pod. I'm never mad at Soto getting a hit for a bunt, but if Buddy and I were arguing if a swing is a better strategy in that spot, what do you think? I actually really appreciate this question. So what are your thoughts on the Juan Soto bunt?
I'm of the opinion that you want your best hitters to swing away. Like, I get how demoralizing it could be for a pitcher. If, you know, at this moment, the Yankees are down 3-1. Volpe's on first base. And Soto, who's obviously one of their two best hitters, lays down a bunt. And then you have Aaron Judge up next. I can see how that would be demoralizing. My opinion, like, if I'm the coach, I would want Soto and Judge to swing away every time. Like, a single there, like, sure. Like, I'm talking, like, mentally, it would probably affect the pitcher on the mound because it's like, really? Like, this guy just laid down a bunt, and now I have to face Aaron Judge with runners on first and second. My opinion is I want Soto swinging away. I'm not criticizing him and saying it's the wrong move, but that's just what I would do in that situation.
I loved it. I thought it was incredible. it was, I thought, a very smart baseball play because they gave it to him, obviously, but it's also just like disrespectful as hell.
It is disrespectful.
And when Soto acknowledged that he did it partly because Judge is behind him.
Yeah.
And Judge is so hot. I was like, yeah, exactly. I mean, it just, to me, it just tells me where their team is at. And it made total sense. I totally get what you're saying. And I get it. Like, you want Juan Soto to hit away every at bat. I get it. I'm largely in agreement. I probably am in total agreement. But when I saw it, I loved it. Because now it's first and second, and you have to pitch to Judge. And Judge has been the best player in baseball for over a month now. And I don't know if this was part of it, but someone had mentioned, it might have been Jeff Nelson on the post-game show, he also knew probably that Snell couldn't get off the mound. And the third baseman's playing back. They're all obviously expecting him to hit away and try to drive a ball. It just made sense to me. And as long as that's not like a habit, then I'm totally fine with it. And Soto himself said, yeah, I might pull it out every, well, I keep saying crazy things. I might drop a bunt every once in a while just to keep them honest. And as long as it's like that, I like it. Also, it has a lingering effect on other teams because you don't know when he might do it again. And they might just say, okay, we'll take the bunt because you're Juan Soto. But the problem is you're probably going to have multiple base runners on base for Aaron Judge with less than two outs. And it just adds another layer of pressure for the other team. And whenever you can do that with those guys, I'm not going to have a problem with it. It's just as many ways as you can put pressure on the defense and the pitcher, I'm all for it. So I thought it was a great play. He did hit two home runs. Maybe he would have hit a third and we wouldn't have had the drama at the end, but I loved it. I thought it was a great baseball play. I'm all for bunting when you're bunting for base hits. I don't like sacrifice bunts for the obvious reasons, unless like the situation really calls for it, like in extra innings and it's tied and you're at home and the other team didn't score a run. I think those are necessary times to bunt, but bunting for a base hit, I'm all for, because I think half the time these guys are asleep because nobody bunts, unless you're a player where they would be alerted by it. Beyond that, like, I love bunting for a base hit because I really think these guys are just not paying attention enough to really defend it if you can execute it properly.
Yeah, I mean, if you can execute it properly, you know, obviously Soto did, But, you know, Soto bunts and it's back to, I think Snell was still on the mound at the time. You know, if he bunts it to Snell, you know, you just wasted an at bat. Obviously, you know, in hindsight, it works out and, you know, you have Judge coming up. But my opinion, I want Soto swinging away every time he possibly can. Yes, Judge is right behind him. Yes, the pitcher would be demoralized with Soto reaching on a bunt, and now it's first and second with Judge. I think Snell actually struck out Judge in that next at bat, but whatever, it doesn't matter. I can see both sides. I'm just gonna stay with the opinion that I want Soto swinging every single time.
Tim agrees. I don't feel strongly about it one way or the other. I don't either. Yeah, I'm just happy that he did it and it worked out and the logic was there.
Yeah, I totally get the logic.
Yeah, if Volpe's on second, he's not doing that.
No.
So he's trying to drive the run in. So right. I think just given the situation, it was fine. Like, I wasn't like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you're Juan Soto. I thought it was fine. Thank you for the question. Okay, Ryan Garcia. Follow Ryan on Twitter. When the Yankees have a good team, especially in recent years, Brian Cashman has shown a lot of aggression at the deadline. Which positions do you think they need to prioritize upgrading and which players interest you the most? Love the show and thank you guys for taking the question. Hope you're all well. We're doing well. We hope you're doing well also. Thank you for the question, Ryan.
I wrote the other day, I spoke with James Rousen, the Yankees hitting coach, about Anthony Rizzo, who, he's just not playing well. He just hasn't played well. He had that one stretch where it coincided with the Milwaukee series where he, you know, started to look like he was coming out of whatever funk he was in. And then, like, basically since then, he just hasn't been very productive. DJ LeMahieu's now back at third base. I wrote in the story about Rizzo that Rizzo's probably not getting replaced anytime soon, like just with the current roster, because if, let's say, the Yankees replace Rizzo, it would see LeMahieu sliding over to first base and Oswaldo going to third base. I mean, Anthony Rizzo is just a better player than Oswaldo. Like, that's what we're talking about here, because, you know, he would essentially, Oswaldo's replacing Rizzo and Rizzo goes to the bench. It's just not happening, because I would rather have Anthony Rizzo getting 4 plate appearances every day than Oswaldo. Oswaldo was great for the first 2 weeks of the season. I mean, he was like basically in line with Juan Soto. That obviously wasn't going to continue. And he's also just better suited in a role that's with him coming off the bench. So if you look at it that way, like we're talking about possibly not anything happening until the trade deadline. I honestly think the Yankees should consider trading for a corner infielder. I don't know how much you can trust Rizzo and LeMahieu. And as we've discussed, the Yankees have a very, very, very good chance of, you know, possibly winning it all this year. They're one of the teams that could certainly win it all. So you want your best team. Like, I get Rizzo is liked in the clubhouse. Sometimes I feel like that stuff is also overblown. It's like, you know, if you're a good player, like, that's more important than clubhouse morale, in my opinion. Like, I'd rather build a team that, you know, is good at every single position. And right now, first base is weak, and third base, who knows, with LeMahieu. I don't know if I have much trust in DJ at this point. I think he's going to be good defensively, but hitting, I don't know, especially coming off a foot injury. So by saying that, the Yankees should be prioritizing making the best roster possible. If they can upgrade first base or third base, they should do that. Like, that's just, I think it's common sense, at least in my view. Like if you can upgrade those positions and give yourself another good player in the lineup, like they should do that with just how good this team is right now. Every little step that you can be better matters. Like we've seen that in the playoffs. Like if you can be better, incrementally better at one area of the game, like that could launch you into the World Series. So I think the Yankees should certainly consider adding a corner infielder. You know, we've talked about it in prior episodes, but Ryan McMahon, who's on the Rockies, he's their third baseman, very good hitter, still young, on a very reasonable contract. You have to call the Rockies just to see what they would do. As I said before, the Rockies are a mess. They're a joke of a franchise. They're poorly run. You have to call them because you just never know what they're going to do. Cabrian Hayes, who's not playing that well for the Pirates, he is the son of Charlie Hayes, former Yankees third baseman, also on a reasonable contract. Who knows, like with the Pirates, you know, the Pirates are obviously trying to build something with their two starting pitchers, Paul Skenes and Jerry Jones. I don't know if they would part ways with Hayes, but also the Pirates love shedding money. They love having a payroll that's under $100 million. So you have to call them too. And then also the bullpen still needs to be upgraded. Yeah. They have, you know, Dennis Santana throwing innings. Like he shouldn't be anywhere near the playoff roster. Caleb Ferguson has not panned out. They obviously don't trust Victor Gonzalez that much. He's not used that much. So they have like 3 to 4 spots in the bullpen that could be upgraded. A couple names who I would be watching out for, Andrew Nardi, who's on the Marlins, a left-handed reliever, strikes out a lot of hitters. We've talked about before, but you know, getting guys who can strike out hitters is important for the bullpen. And he's one of the best at it. The Marlins are basically having a garage sale. They're just, hey, I mean, like it's just a garage sale in Miami. You know, come on down. We have discounts on everything. So he's one. Tanner Scott, also on the Marlins, another lefty. He's someone that the Yankees should inquire about. And then the White Sox, you know, the Yankees made a trade last year with the White Sox. There's some familiarity there. They added Keenan Middleton at the deadline. Michael Capich, been one of the better relievers in the American League. He, I believe, has
Kopech,
yes. Yeah. I think he has 1 year left on his contract before hitting free agency. Makes total sense for the Yankees to inquire about there. Don't know if he's going to cost that much. With Nardi, he's pre-arbitration, so the Yankees would have to, you know, probably give up something there. You know, I look at the move that they made with Scott Efros in 22. I believe Efros was pre-arbitration when they traded for him. They gave up Hayden Wesneski, who's actually been pitching well for the Cubs this year. So those are a couple names who I'd be watching out for. It's still, you know, we're still over a month away from the trade deadline, so more names will emerge. It's still very early. Most of the time, teams aren't even considering trading anyone at this point. We'll have a better sense of that when July rolls around. But those are a couple names who I would be interested in if I was Brian Cashman.
So I think bullpen is obvious, and I agree with you. Corner infielder is the next priority. But I was looking at names, and I don't think that there are many options to really satisfy that need on the trade market. I think Ryan McMahon is the obvious one, and I know people have started to bring him up outside of what we said about him on the podcast. I just don't trust the Rockies making an in-season trade. I mean, I agree with you, they're a disaster, but I think what comes along with that is just not understanding how to read the market or cash in chips or understand that they're not going anywhere anytime soon and that they should probably do things to get ready for the future. I mean, it just feels like when We talk about them being disasters, all encompassing, like not being aware of the present and not being aware of the future as well. And they just come across as a team that's very difficult to do business with because of those things. I don't know if they want to be good now. I don't know if they want to be good in the future. I don't know if they care about the present and the future. Like
I don't know what the Rockies.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the Rockies know. I mean, because what do they actually do in either direction to let you know what they're thinking? I mean, it's
nothing.
So I would love to trade for Ryan McMahon. I know that there are other teams that are interested in Ryan McMahon, but I don't believe the Rockies are aware that they can trade Ryan McMahon, let alone generate interest to trade him. I just don't. I think he's on the worst team he could possibly be on if he wants to get out of there. Because what are they doing? You know, I just don't have confidence in the Rockies understanding how to capitalize on it. And even I'm speaking about this beyond him going to the Yankees. I just mean to any team. Like, when do the Rockies make trades? And like, when do they make sense? I can't really think of those moments. I mean, so I'm looking at the other third basemen that are available and there's like nothing. I mean, you know, they're either on a good team or they're not very good. So I don't know how they address this. I mean, is Gio Urshela going to be like that significant of an upgrade? I know he's a fan favorite, and I like Gio, but is he worth bringing him over? I don't know. I'm not sure. Then I looked at first baseman, but I don't think they're just going to outright acquire a first baseman. So I don't know how they address that. Maybe the Yankees don't even view corner infield as an issue and they believe in Rizzo and he'll turn it around. But I think they kind of need to get somebody in here. I just don't know who that is right now. I'm looking at these names and I don't know who they are. Like, Jaime Candelario is not having a good season. Cabrian Hayes is not hitting. Toro, it's not an option. Arenado, absolutely not. Like,
there's one name who I would certainly throw out, who would be very interesting, especially if he turns it around. I mean, Paul Goldschmidt would make sense.
He's right.
You know, the Cardinals are always trying to win. But there may come a point with the Cardinals, again, we still have over a month to go, where they look at the situation. Goldschmidt's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. So this would be a rental for the Yankees,
yeah,
which I think they would like, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't put any money on the books for, you know, Soto or whatever. You know, the Cardinals may look at it as we may not re-sign Goldschmidt. We're not going anywhere. We don't have a chance to win the title. Let's get something for Goldschmidt. I mean, I think that would be that would certainly be an interesting name for the Yankees. He feels very Yankee.
Yes, he does.
he's very Yankee. So that, I mean, I think that could certainly be someone to keep an eye on, especially if the Cardinals fall out of the race. I think they're already 7 games back of the Brewers. They're not beating the Brewers in that division anyway. And also, if they make it to the wild card, it's like, okay, they're not winning the title.
Right.
They're not good. So he's someone who I would be looking out for. I know Judge respects Goldschmidt a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Me, Brendan Cuddy, my coworker, and Andy McCullough wrote a story last spring training on Goldschmidt and Judge getting together before last season. They spent a day down in Jupiter, Florida, where they just nerded out over hitting. Judge was like trying to pick up on Goldschmidt's 2-strike approach. He ended up not using it, but Goldschmidt's certainly one of the hitters that Judge respects the most across baseball. Again, I don't know if the Yankees would want to outward, like add just a primary first baseman. He doesn't play anywhere else. But again, if we're talking, could Goldschmidt make a difference if he turns it around? Like they should at least consider it. It's not like he's bad in the clubhouse. Like he's widely respected. So like he wouldn't be, you know, messing with, you know, clubhouse morale or anything like that. I don't think. But yeah, I think he would be someone to watch in the next month.
Yeah. I mean, I trust him turning it around more than I do Rizzo.
Yeah. He's one of the best hitters of his generation. Like he's a very good player. I would suspect, unless he's washed, I don't watch Cardinals baseball every day. I don't know what the problem is there. You know, he is older, but unless age has caught up to him, I would suspect him turning it around. He's a very, very good player.
Yeah. Yeah. He can make a difference. I'm curious if they, like you said, if they would want a primary first baseman, but you know, it might play out in a particular way where it makes sense to go after him. But that is an interesting name. I had thought about him, but I was also like, he's a right-handed first baseman. So I don't know if they want to do that, but maybe they will at some point. I mean, things can change in the next month. So good question. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's do one more before we get into the major theme of all these questions. From Joshua Finchler. Good evening. Hope you guys had a nice weekend. My weekend was pretty good, except the Rangers lost, which was annoying. With Cody Poteet looking solid in a small sample so far, I assume he is in line to be our fifth as Cole rehabs the next few weeks. Does this make guys like Will Warren, Beeter, or Chase Hampton more likely to trade at the deadline when we look for high-end bullpen depth or corner infield addition, or do you think that is a reach?
I don't know if I would trade those guys for bullpen help. I would trade those guys if it meant like having someone who's either pre-arbitration, like we were talking about with Nardi, or someone who you have under control who's in arbitration, but he still has, you know, four more years to go. Like I wouldn't touch those guys unless you're getting someone who's a controllable piece. Like I wouldn't say, let's trade Chase Hampton for Kopech. Like you're not going to do that. I wouldn't say like I would suspect those guys being moved for bullpen pieces unless like that person is pre-arbitration. And even then, like I would try and hold out in trading those guys unless it's like a bigger piece that's coming back. Hampton's also been hurt for the entire season. I don't think that he has much trade value right now across the league. I don't think he's pitched this year. He's he had a shoulder injury that's kept him out since like spring training. Will Warren has not pitched well at all. I don't know what's going on there. I probably should check into that. He hasn't been good at all. Like his numbers are really, really bad. Clayton Beeter is on the injured list right now. I believe he has a shoulder injury. But like we've discussed previously with Beeter, you know, it's possible that we see him at some point in the bullpen. His stuff is good. He may get a chance at some point. So I would say it's probably unlikely for any of those guys to get traded, especially for bullpen help. But, you know, you never know. And also, when it comes to trading pitchers, I would trust the Yankees organization to make the right moves. Like if they trade one of those guys, they see something in them that suggests that it's just not going to work here. I think they've earned that right to have full trust in their decision-making when it comes to signing pitchers, targeting pitchers, or trading pitchers. Like the Yankees organization, when it comes to pitching right now, I think they're one of the best when it comes to evaluating and developing talent.
I agree. I don't have much more to add to that. I mean, they're either hurt or ineffective, so I'm not sure how much value they have at the moment, depending on what happens when the deadline comes up. So I'm in agreement. All right. So we have now hit the over overarching theme of all these mailbag questions as we get them. And again, we appreciate them. This is not a criticism. We appreciate them. But we've reached the point of the show where we're now going to talk about Jason Dominguez, everyone's favorite top prospect, who is obviously doing well in AA on his rehab assignment. So from John Harvey, other than injury to a current outfielder or DH, what is the best path forward to integrate Dominguez without disruption or reducing his playing time? Grisham, DFA, and rotate others' day off. I will just take this one. That path does not exist unless someone gets hurt or you bench someone. So you do not have a path forward to integrate Jason Dominguez without disruption or reducing his playing time. And the Grisham suggestion, I've talked about this a bunch of times already. He doesn't play. I mean, we're on June 3rd. He does not have many plate appearances, and you do not want Jason Dominguez to just replace Trent Grisham as someone on the bench who also does not play. So there is not a path for Jason Dominguez to be on the Yankees anytime soon. Someone would have to get hurt, and he'd have to be ready to go. I think the encouraging thing is that he's showing that he's healthy and that he can be productive, at least in Double A, which he's already conquered. So to see him already start off at that level, I think is very encouraging. It's good. It's a good sign just in a health context. I don't think the production itself means much because he already conquered Double A. He should be doing that if he's healthy. I think it's just a good progress report on his health. But there is no clear path for Dominguez to be on this team anytime soon. You're not benching Stanton. Stanton's having a very good year. We've talked about Verdugo and his impact. Judge and Soto are there. I'm going to say this because, and I know it'll bother somebody. They don't need Jason Dominguez right now. Jason Dominguez does not have a role in this team, and they don't need Jason Dominguez. They're 42-19. We just spent 20 minutes talking about how they're the best team in Major League Baseball. I know people want to see him, and they're excited to see him. I'm excited to see him. It's totally worth that excitement, and it's great to see homegrown guys who made an immediate impact show up and hopefully extend that impact and have great careers in the pinstripes. I get all of that. I'm in agreement. But right now, they do not need Jason Dominguez, and Jason Dominguez should be playing every day. It's not going to happen on a major league level unless somebody gets hurt. I mean, that's just the reality of it, and that is fine. He's young, and the team is playing well, and they're playing great, and to have that problem and to have that depth ready to go in case something does happen is a luxury that we should embrace and not rush to just force his way onto the roster when he's not needed. I mean, they don't need Jason Dominguez right now, which is, I think, a good thing, not a bad thing.
I totally agree. The one thing I'll add with Dominguez is the Yankees can, you know, have him come up in September when rosters expand. You know, by then most of the minor league seasons is over. Like, I believe it's over by then. So he can have the experience of, one, being on the bench when the team is gearing up for the playoffs. And then two, like, Dominguez could still make the postseason roster. He's on the 40-man roster for the postseason and be a bench option for the Yankees. And he can easily replace Trent Grisham at that point because, you know, the minor league season's over. You know, there's no at-bats to be had. And he also gets the experience in October, even though he may not be, you know, if everybody's healthy, he's not going to be an everyday option, but he at least gets the experience of seeing postseason baseball up close on the bench. And two, there would probably be some role for him in the postseason, whether it's pinch running, defensive substitution, whatever it might be. Like, he would still have a little spot or a little role on the team. And that's, I think, would be very valuable. As of now, when we're talking on June 3rd, having him be on the bench and not play, I think, would stunt his development. you want him to continue developing. He's still young. There's still development to be had. He hasn't conquered he's conquered every level, but like there's still little things that he can get better with, and he can do that by playing every day. You know, Trent Grisham's had 39 at-bats this year, 39 at-bats. He's 2 for 39, which is unbelievable, by the way. I want the Yankees to keep Grisham on the roster just to see if they'll have someone finish a season hitting under 100. I think that would be pretty remarkable. But again, I echo what you say with Dominguez. There's no role for him to play every day, and that's what you want him to do. It's totally fine to continue getting at bats on the AAA level or AA if they think competition's better there. It doesn't matter. He should be playing every single day. He can't play every day on the major league roster. There's nowhere for him. As you said, as long as Stanton continues slugging, he's not getting replaced. We've talked about Verdugo. He is playing well, both offensively and defensively, and he's not replacing Judge or Soto. Like, there's just nowhere for him to play right now. And you don't need a cycle in off days for guys just so you can get Jason Dominguez playing time 3 days a week. There's no need for it.
They're not cycling guys. They play the same lineup every day. They're not interested in that. Their guys are healthy. They're playing well, and they're playing. So there's no role. There's no spot for him. I really like the idea of potentially putting him on a playoff roster and having him be a part of that. But right now, in the middle of the regular season, there's no space for him. And I always laugh when I see these tweets after a Stanton at bat where he might strike out or he grounds out or something, and everybody's calling for Dominguez. And then two at bats later, Stanton's lacing some ball at like 200 miles per hour in the gap, or like he's hitting a home run. And it's like, Stanton's playing well. Like, the thing for me right now is simply embrace what's going on here. Things are going well. Things did not go well last year. This is totally different from last year. Things are good. We don't need to replace everybody, especially the ones who are playing really well. They have the best record in baseball, and it's been earned. You know, no flukes here. Everybody's playing well. There are a bunch of people that you can argue can be a part of the All-Star team. Like, things are going well. So we don't need to force things if it's not there. And we don't need to call for someone's head or benching or DFA, especially right now, just to put in somebody else. And then what if Dominguez doesn't do well? You know, like, there's a chance that he does not perform well, because if you put Dominguez in, he's going to have to play better than the person he's replacing, which is high expectations and high demand, because pretty much everybody in that lineup outside of Rizzo and Glaber, who's been a little bit better lately, people have been playing and contributing at a pretty consistently high level for their position and their talent. So he has to match and then exceed that for it to make sense. And I mean, like, why put him in that position? I don't even understand where that's beneficial for the player or the team. So, you know, he's there. He's depth. He'll be available if they need it. The season is a marathon, as we all know. We just saw Clark Schmidt get hurt. We had the conversation about, will there be a sixth man? Will this, will that? And I think the conversation was valid for the time because everyone was healthy, but things happen. You can't anticipate an injury or say this person's going to get hurt, but it could happen. And then we can revisit the conversation with more sincerity in how he can be used. And then you plug and play there. But right now, Dominguez is not going to be on the roster. And again, that is fine. There are good reasons why. It's not a punishment. It doesn't reflect poorly on him. It doesn't reflect poorly on the organization. It's a good thing that a very good young player can't crack the roster. That means the major league team is doing well. It's good. It's okay. It's fine. Like, he's going to get his time at some point.
I have nothing else to say.
Cool.
You covered it.
Thank you. We had another mailbag question, but that was about Jason. So I think, like, we've we've covered that topic for this week. So as we wrap this up, do you have any final words before we get out of here?
I'm excited for this coming weekend series against the Dodgers. Yamamoto's pitching on Friday, which should be fun. You know, obviously the Yankees were heavily involved heavily involved with Yamamoto this offseason. Should be a fun series, potential World Series preview, who knows? You know, but the way both teams have been playing, you know, obviously the Phillies in the National League are, I think they have the best record. Yeah, they have the best record in the NL, but, you know, Yankees Dodgers would certainly be a fun World Series preview. So I'm excited for this weekend's games.
Yeah, it should be good. I'm thinking about doing a live stream on Friday before that series starts. I have to figure out how that works. We do this through StreamYard. So I'll figure out how that works, and if anybody's interested, I'll poll people and see if people want to do that. And if you're free, you can hop on as well, obviously. But try to get something going that's maybe not a recorded episode, but something that we could talk about the Dodgers series and kind of previewed and see how that goes and how fun that weekend will be. So Tim looks like he's falling asleep, so I don't think he has any final words since he's been letting his voice be heard and known throughout this episode. But I think he's set his fill for this episode. I don't have anything to add. The Yankees are good. Embrace it. Enjoy it. They play Minnesota, then the Dodgers. Hopefully they have another great week of baseball. And we appreciate all of you listening to the podcast. You can find us on all of your favorite podcast platforms. You can also find us on our YouTube channel of the same name. Please leave us a 5-star review. Help us spread the word. Subscribe. All those great things. We appreciate each and every one of you listening and supporting. And we will be back next week.